Hello, listeners.
Hi, listeners.
It's another episode of the Board Game Brothers podcast. I'm Jeffrey Craig.
And I'm Matthew Craig.
We're brothers in real life.
And game designers in real life.
And this week we have something a little different for you because we have a big announcement. And this is kind of like a teaser for what's to come in the next year based on this announcement.
Right. Specifically,
what is the big announcement?
We are going to be launching a Patreon next year at the start of January. For those who are unfamiliar, Patreon is a website in which you get to support us directly, and we send you bonus content depending on the different tier you subscribe at. It is monthly payments of whatever you want, but if you pay at least $1, then you do get two special bonuses where each episode going forward will randomly shout out three patrons from the $1 tier or higher, and will also feature a random question submitted by a patron at $1 tier or higher. And then additionally, at the $5 or more per month, you get monthly episodes of two series that we will be running on the weeks we are not doing our normal series. So the first of which is the Board Game Bros Presents the Dusty Shelf, in which I will be taking a new game, or a new old game, classic game, different one every week, and dusting it off and seeing what makes it tick. So you can expect reviews / analyses of games like Uno, Monopoly, Battleship, Yahtzee, you know, all those old ones. And then also on the other month, or on the other weeks, so it will be normal series, Dusty Shelf, normal series, and then this one, we will do Board Game Bros Let's Make a Game, in which I will be designing an entire board game from start to finish, from scratch. And Jeffrey will be guests on some of these episodes, but for the most part, it's just going to be me. And but this episode is going to be a preview of the first episode. Or not really preview. It's a preview of Let's Make a Game, but it is the first episode in entirety of Let's Make a Game. Okay.
Yep. So stay tuned for more information regarding the Patreon. That'll be starting at the beginning of the next year. And until then, enjoy this preview episode of Board Game Bros Let's Make a Game.
Let's make a game. Hello, listeners, and today is our first episode of a new spin-off series of Board Game Bros, the Let's Make a Game series. Normally, this is going to be part of our new Patreon, in which we'll have two side series that you can follow that way. However, of course, since it's the end of the year and we're starting the Patreon next year, I figure that it's a good chance to give you a sample of what's to come. I am, of course, your host, Matthew Craig, going to go through and design a game from scratch, and with me is our guest for the first episode.
Hi, I'm Jeffrey Craig.
Yeah.
Thanks for introducing me.
Yeah, normally it's just going to be me on the mic, however, you know, granted, since this is taking the spot of our regularly scheduled episode, this all works out pretty well, and it'll help to have another head to bounce ideas off and from. Yeah, I touched on it a bit already, but in this series, I am going to be designing a game from start to finish, from scratch. I don't even have a complete idea of what I want the game to be. I have some ideas, and Jeffrey has some ideas. And so, yeah, we're going to start at the idea phase, the brainstorming. And, you know, by listening to this, you'll see the process that it goes to take a whole game.
To make a whole game.
The process it takes to make a game.
Yes.
Great.
At least our process.
Your process. Yeah. This processes in any creative field can obviously vary from person to person, individual to individual. However, you know, for this case, it does help for, you know, to see, if you're unfamiliar with the process, to see an example or hear an example.
So, all right, so
to start off,
so we're in the the brainstorming idea phase, right?
Yes.
So I have a question for you before we get into that. And that is, like, what kinds of ideas are you looking for here?
So
what is an idea, or how will you know when you've reached an idea that you want to take further?
Right.
Is there like criteria?
So usually sort of the advice is to start with either a theme, mechanic, component, or as I put it, also a play pattern that you want players to interact with, and then build off of it from there. Personally, though, I try to come up with just like, I'm a very visual thinker. So when I design games or work on game prototypes, I usually have sort of an image of how I want the game to be played. But for most of the time, that includes just either a mechanic or a play pattern that I want to encourage.
More my question is like, what will separate the good ideas from the bad ideas here?
Oh, okay. So good ideas and bad ideas is something that is hard to tell in the idea phase alone. Sort of the thing I say is you can't play test a game in your head. And so like a good idea for me at this point is just something I'm interested in. Like if it captivates me for more than a few minutes, then I'm willing to put the time in it to make a prototype. And then from there, I'm willing to play test it and see if it's actually fun or interesting, in as a board game proper. So to answer the question, it's more so that like, really, it's just something interesting that I'm willing to proceed with is all I'm looking for. I have a lot of failed prototypes that weren't necessarily fun to play just because I had a cool idea that I wanted to try out. So it's like, it's not a question of like, is it going to be fun or is the idea good at this point? Because that's kind of hard to tell at this point.
Right. There's going to be, it's an iterative process, and it's about, you know, trying something, and if it's failing, then trying something else.
Exactly.
So in that case, do you think in this series, you might start to design a game and then find out that it's not as interesting as you thought it was going to be, and you might switch up and try a different game?
There's a very real chance that happens, yeah.
That's honestly kind of cool for me. That's like, if you follow this series, you may witness multiple games being designed.
Right, or at least partially designed.
Partially designed, sure.
Right,
but yeah. Hey, that's the process.
Both of us have brought some ideas and some possibilities to this episode. So I do want to start off with, though, a few criteria for this. And these are more criteria that are based off of the format that this is in. The first one is I want this game to be easily print and played because, you know, I want to share it once it's done. And basically the main thing this boils down to is probably no dice, because while some dice are easy to come across, like D6s, it's not a guarantee that people will have the exact quantity that I'm looking for if I were to make a dice game. And so, like, in my head at least, it's easy to share a print-and-play game that's, like, mostly paper materials in the end. And then the other main criteria is I want the game to play well solo to some extent. This could be either, you know, a game that, like, is just built to be played solo as far as, like, you know, an engine builder where there's little player interaction, or it could be a game with some sort of automated component, which is what a lot of engine builders nowadays do. You know, things like Scythe and Root have their automata decks. Basically like a sort of form of artificial intelligence or decision making. But those are my main, like, criteria. And the reason why I want it to play well solo is just so I can playtest it solo easier. Which is more so just so I can get these episodes out on time. But beyond that, I have a list of mechanical ideas and thematic ideas. And I think you have a similar list.
Yep.
So let's just start off with a few. So some things I personally like are tile building and or tile placement and variable starts. Variable starts meaning like either variable powers or characters or, you know, some starting situation. Personally, I like these because variable starts are really good at adding replayability because, you know, you want to keep playing to see what all the different factions or whatever feel like. They're also good in strategy games to give players a sense of direction at the start, and it's a good way to sort of facilitate having multiple equally balanced strategies. And then tile placement I just like because I like games with some sort of spatial reasoning, and tile placement tends to add that pretty easily, especially if you make the tiles care about what tiles are adjacent to them. And tile placement, obviously, any sort of placing a tile onto a board in some sort of solid tessellated formation.
All right, so starting with these, are these the same line item, or are these two different items from your mechanic?
These are two different items from my mechanical list.
Okay, obviously, when it comes to mechanics, like you can mix and match lots of different mechanics. You could obviously very easily tack on a tile placement mechanic onto a game with variable starts, or a variable start mechanic onto a game with tile placement.
Exactly.
So are you, for the purposes of this section of brainstorming, do you think we're trying to figure out like what the primary, like the central mechanic of the game is going to be?
So my goal is to find like one main mechanic to prototype first. That doesn't have to be the main mechanic of the final game, obviously, because we're iterating, but at the moment, I do want to just
need somewhere to start.
Right. At the moment, I want to list off these sort of ideas, and once those are all sort of on the table, see how they meld together.
Okay. So it's not like we're listing our list and you're going to pick one thing from what we've said and build from there. You're just kind of like getting an idea of the field and seeing where it pulls you.
It's more like throwing ingredients into a soup.
Okay.
You know, I don't know what the soup is going to taste like, but I know that I want to put an onion in it.
All right. So I have you know that there might be an onion in the end.
Yeah.
It's probably better. Sure. Obviously, I don't want you to use every idea that I wrote down here. Okay. Here's some ideas for these are more my component ideas that I have written down here. My first idea is a decoder ring.
Very Christmas story.
Yeah. I mean, it's around that time of year at the time of recording this, but it's a pretty easy thing to make print and play, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And I just felt like it's a component that hasn't really been utilized in like any game. So it at least would have a sort of unique selling point to it. I think it also just kind of drips with flavor.
Yeah.
Like there's a couple different ways you can go with a decoder ring, but all of them are like very flavorful. Like you could be an international man of mystery, or you could be like
treasure hunter.
A treasure hunter, yeah, exactly. Picturing like a stone decoder ring, you know, with ancient runes on it. It's a pretty flexible component because, like, you know, you can set the decoder ring to one code and decode something that way, and then another piece might come along and you could reset the coding ring to something else, and that could provide different information. You could also have multiple different kinds of decoder rings. Maybe each player has a different decoder ring to reveal different pieces of information.
Right.
It sounds like a tedious component, so you'd have to design it so that you don't have to check, like, you don't have to translate an entire sentence with the decoder ring. That would obviously take way too long.
Right.
It would have to just be like a couple words or a couple letters at a time, or it might not even be letters. It might be like symbols that correlate to other things.
Right. And you'd probably want to space out the times that you have to use it so that you're not constantly like poring over this one circle.
Sure.
Yeah.
Another component that I have that I think works well for print and play is a spinner.
A spinner.
So every game that you played as a child had a spinner in it. And like now no games have spinners. So I was just thinking, like, can we bring back the spinner and use it in an interesting way?
Hmm.
I had an idea at one point. This is totally unrelated to this project because it was like almost a fleshed idea for a board game that would be printed on bottles, soda bottles. The mechanic for like randomness in the game would be spinning the bottle cap, and the bottle cap would have an arrow pointed on it. And you would use that to like get random results. Like maybe you could spin that bottle cap on a surface that had different things on it, and wherever the arrow pointed, that's like the action you took. So anyways, I just think that there's still some space left in the spinner game. No games are doing it lately, so bring the spinner back.
Yeah, bring the spinner back. Hashtag. Right. Do you have any more mechanical ideas?
I have a mechanic idea for Fog of War.
Ooh.
So, and now, as I wrote that down and thought about it a little more, Fog of War does technically, in like an abstract way, exist in like pretty much every game when there's hidden information. So like there's just cards in your hand or cards in your deck.
Yeah.
Or face down cards that you know the identity of, but other people don't. And that's essentially Fog of War. But and there's some mechanics that will interact with it, like looking at your opponent's hands or looking at certain cards in your opponent's hands is kind of like gaining vision in the Fog of War. But I think maybe just a more physical, like three-dimensional representation of that. I like the idea of there being hidden information, and then players can take steps to uncover that information.
Right. Yeah.
In a more like three-dimensional space.
Right. When I think of Fog of War in like a video game sense, it's a very literal fog. Mm-hmm. And sort of the key thing is that in those games, when you're near something, you can see it. But once you leave, any changes to it are invisible to you. You only mm-hmm. know like the last known state or the last visible state.
Right. I think one cool thing about Fog of War is that when it exists in a game, then a very important piece of strategy in that game becomes vision control. So like you think of StarCraft, it's very important to scout out what your opponent is doing early on in the game, because you cannot see them. And if you can, then you will get like very crucial information that will help you devise a strategy. Same thing in like MOBAs. Wards are very important in those games because not knowing where your opponents are is the difference between just straight up winning or losing.
Right, yeah.
So, something like that, like a game where vision control becomes kind of important, could be interesting.
Mm-hmm. So, is that your last last mechanical item?
Yes.
Okay, so... already, I've got a few ideas. I like the sort of mechanical intrigue you can have with Fog of War and a Dakota Ring. Those are not necessarily in the same game, but like they both kind of bring to mind a very like tense, almost deduction-y sort of game. A lot of mystery or, like I said, intrigue. Thematically, I just have a few different themes that I like. So, like, mashup fantasy, sort of like Smash Up or the video game Enter the Gungeon. Just sort of a game where, like, it's kind of a mishmash, or I guess Munchkin, too. A mishmash of a bunch of fictional things. Not necessarily playing them seriously at all. More so, like, satirical or referential. I also really like games where you play as what would normally be a villain. Like a supervillain type of thing. I can't think of any board games off the top of my head other than the obvious Villainous, the Disney one. But like in video games, there's like Dungeon Keeper, where you play as the master of a monster dungeon and summon monsters and stuff like that. Those are two themes that I like, but if I do the Dakota Ring, I kind of like the idea of being a treasure hunter of sorts, like an Indiana Jones type. But how about you? Do you have any thematic suggestions?
All right, so first thematic suggestion is a game about time loops.
Time loops. Whoops. All right. There's a time few. Loops. Yeah, there's a few games I know of that do time loops, but like time loops are an interesting concept to me, at least. Mm-hmm. I that's definitely helped because I've been playing a video game about time loops recently. But I think one thing I like about time loops is the sort of idea that there is a perfect version of the loop that you can do. So I think if I made a game involving time loops, that's something I would want to include as like part of the game's climax.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I enjoy the mastery of the time loop as like a narrative thing where like you start out being very unacquainted with this time loop, but then by the end you know every little detail of the time loop.
Right.
And like you can achieve like crazy things because of that.
Right.
Another theme, the other two themes I have are esports and platformer.
Esports and platformer.
Yeah, I think a game about esports, just kind of like a meta game.
Oh, about esports. Okay.
Yeah.
So sort of the Millennium Blades, but to esports.
Right. Yeah, I'd be interested in a game like that, although that seems like a very niche kind of game
to make.
Somebody would have to be both into board games and esports in order to consider playing that game.
Mm-hmm.
So that's probably too niche, but a platformer board game could be interesting.
Right.
To try and just figure out how to take the platformer genre of video game and translate it to board game.
Right.
Like, what does that look like?
I feel like I've seen like dexterity games based off platformers or racing games. Like, I know there's a Sonic the Hedgehog board game that's like a racing game. But that's, I think, more like Formula Day than anything. But yeah, that's something I've also kind of thought about, is like, how do you make a platformer, which is a genre about physics and reaction and movement, into a game that's compelling as a tabletop game?
Mm-hmm.
So that's an interesting idea. I think I really like the time loop idea mixed with the decoder ring mechanic. There might be some sort of something there, I should say.
I do like also combining those two, that the ring is like, it's a loop.
And yeah.
So it kind of,
there's a,
it loops around.
There's, yeah, it's sort of, it's like sort of a symbol.
Yeah. There's a connection there.
Cohesion. Yeah. So got a few ideas right now. One idea I like is, a time loop game. Sorry, hold on one second. A time loop game where there is a fog of war element where players would be moving through different locations, and there'd be something that updates as time progresses that you can only see if you're in that location. So, like, that would be sort of a fog of war idea, is, say, there's like, five different cities you can go to, and each city has something that, like, will be put into play at a specific time, like a deck of cards where each card has a location on it. And then you place that on the city, and then, you know, when you're at the city, you can look at it. But if you're not at the city, then you can't. Something like that.
Mm-hmm.
The idea being that, you know, you can only go to so many locations in one loop, but as you go through the multiple time loops, you see more and more of each location. It sort of fits that time loop schedule, compelling sort of a narrative, while also having sort of a fog of war element. So, like, right there, I just combined, like, a concept from one of the themes that I liked, and then put it with one of the mechanical ideas, the Fog of War. And it just sort of, I guess in my head, it makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And it still only uses, like, a board and then a deck of cards, which is pretty easy to do. And then you could even have, like, the decoder ring being a timer, almost. In some way. I haven't worked that out yet, but I don't think I need to. Because, like, one of my big things I recommend to people is, you know, iterate one thing at a time, or at least near the start of your design process, you want to, like, make a quick prototype for just any idea you have. Even if it's just one mechanic, just so you can try it out. You don't want to playtest too many things at once, or else if it's not fun, you might not know what's the unfun part. So, like, by only playtesting a few things at the start, you can kind of get an idea of if those ideas were good. It's basically, like, iterate often, fail faster.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you want to, if you're going to fail, which you will, during the prototype phase, you want to fail quickly and efficiently. And efficiently failing means, like, you know, setting yourself up in a situation where you can test a few things, like a science experiment. You know, you have your control, but you have your, like, one change that you're testing. So that's sort of the mindset I have when at this early part of the prototype phase. And for that, so, you know, I've got this board with multiple decks or something like that that has a time loop going on. Maybe not a deck, because there is a problem that I feel like happens in some games that are based around time, which is that there's a lot of upkeep. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's a lot happening that you have to keep track of every turn or else it stops working. So right. Maybe,
like, in this example, if you have, like, say you have 7 days to accomplish a goal or else it resets, then, like, every location would have a stack of 7 cards on it. And, like, day one, you can look at card one. Day two, you can look at card two. If you go to those locations, but you got to make sure that you don't get those cards out of order, or else, like, the whole thing gets messed up.
Right. So maybe the decoder ring is the only thing you're actually changing every round. Maybe it's like a clock that has, like, a rune on it, and there's an arrow that points to that rune or that time. And instead of each city having, like, a deck of cards, it has a few things that are next to it that are face down. And each one has one of these runes on it. And so when the decoder ring points to the right time, then is when you can look at the things appropriate for that time. That way, like, most of the actual, like, laying down cards or whatever is done during setup.
Mm-hmm.
Something like that.
Okay.
And then the only upkeep you have to do in that case is the decoder ring. And then the ring can still be repurposed for other things, which is nice.
Yeah, it's just, like, this corresponds to that. And so, primarily, that's used to say, like, it's this hour, so
exactly.
Look at these runes. But then, like, you could also just find artifacts. And, I don't know, maybe depending on the time of day, these artifacts could do something different, you know, depending where you are in the game's board.
Yeah, that'd be interesting if, like, like, it spells out a word at the right time of day. Though I'm not sure. But anyways, like, working through the specifics of that, I don't have to do at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
I think I have a good idea of, like, this sort of play pattern that I want to prototype. But I don't know what I want the actual mechanic of what you're doing to be just yet. So...
So you're trying to make a prototype, right, of
right.
This game? Like, by the end of the episode, you want to have, like, a vision of what a prototype of this game would look like.
Right.
So does that mean that we need to figure out how the game ends?
At least, yeah, how the prototype would
end. Able to end. Okay.
So if I want to prototype just this timer thing, then I at least need something to do with the timer. So, like, if the goal is to do everything in a loop that you need to do a specific way, then or like, you know, if the goal is to scout out these locations and then perform a certain set of actions, then I want to figure out at least a basic outline of what those actions could be so that, you know, I have something to work towards in the prototype. Or so in a more abstract way, it's that if I'm testing the mechanic of the timer, that mechanic relies on other things to be in place. And so I need to at least make a stand-in version of those to actually test the timer. So what I'm saying is, so let's say we have like 5 cities, and each city has, let's just say for the sake of this prototype, 2 cards next to it that are active at a certain time. And, or maybe 3, let's just say 5 cities with 3 things next to it that are active at, you know, a certain time. At the start of the game, the time is the time for each of these is randomized by putting little symbols on them, and then you have the actual timer, which starts on one of these symbols. So then every round you move the timer, and then the cards corresponding to the symbol it's pointing to are able to be looked at if you're in that city. This also means that we need to have some sort of movement. So there'd probably be like you get X number of actions every turn.
Mm-hmm.
And just for the sake of prototyping, let's just say, you know, every player takes a turn and then time moves. And then it starts with the next starting player clockwise from the previous starting player. Like a typical rotating starting player mode. So, let's say you have 3 actions, which are move to a adjacent city, and these will probably be laid out like a pentagon. There'd probably be shortcuts between them, but I think right now I'm just sort of visualizing a basic shape. Don't have to get too worried about the balance of like the routes between things yet. And then one of the actions is to move. One of the actions is to look at one of the cards available, and then probably, if you're able to, use its ability. And then let's say, since we're having this decoder ring that has like runic symbols on it, let's say that the goal of the game is to gather like these artifacts or some sort of thing. Maybe it's like you're trying to seal some sort of demon or something. But basically, what I'm picturing is different cards either give you like some sort of power, like magic power, mana, and then some cards will let you use that to get like a token, and then if you get enough tokens in one loop, you win. So basically, let me do this in terms of a game flow map, which is sort of something that I use where I think about like what's the point A to point B to point C to win the game. Okay, so I just typed out a sort of flow chart of how the game would go for this prototype. So you explore the cities and check the cards on them as time progresses. Then you find the route that gets all the tokens you need by doing that. And then you perform the route in the final loop. And specifically, the route would be getting like a mana or something from some cards and spending them to get tokens on other cards. Now, there is one problem, which is that I can already at least sort of see, is that how do you say that people are honest? So, you know, in a game with hidden information, usually other players aren't being affected by it until it is public. Or usually a player can't benefit from it until it's public. But if there's a fog of war, then how do you make sure that the player who is doing the action is doing what it says? Now, this isn't necessarily a concern right now, because if I'm just going to be prototyping it and playtesting this timer, then it doesn't really matter, because I know everybody that's going to be playtesting it, especially if I just playtest myself. And, like, nobody's going to try to Chia at this point in the game, but it is something to consider. But, so, what I have right now is a list of materials I would need to make, which are a clock, basically, with symbols and then an arrow on the inside. And that's sort of the decoder ring. A board that has 5 locations. About 15 or so cards that are either giving you a resource or letting you get tokens by spending a resource, or maybe like giving you more moves, like making it easier to move around the board by spending some resource. And then I just need the tokens for how you win, but technically those can always just be like writing something down on a pencil. Because, like, when you're prototyping, obviously not only do you want to make the list of things you're prototyping and, like, make the mechanical game part of the prototype efficient, but physically you want to make the physical prototype efficient. What I mean is, like, it might be tempting to, like, print out cards for a first prototype, but in my opinion, it's better to just, like, cut up an index card and use those as playtest cards. And, like, you don't need to cut out a lot of tokens. If you need tokens for the game, you can just write them with pencil.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, you're going to change the game, and so you want to make it either disposable with the intent that you're going to throw it away or change it or fix it or whatever, or you want to make it editable, so using pencil to, you know, allow you to write down small details or make small changes as you go.
Mm-hmm.
And
all right. So I have... Okay, go ahead, if you have more to say on that point.
No, that's about it for that point. I was just going to say that's most of what I need for this first episode.
Okay. I just kind of want to go through a couple clarifying things about this game. Like, so are you picturing this as a competitive game?
At the moment, yes, but it could be cooperative.
Yeah. So one thing about making it competitive that I see as an advantage is just that it doesn't have to scale. When it's cooperative, like, if you have more people, then that means that they can visit more locations.
Yeah.
And so you would have to find something, some component of the game to scale so that the difficulty of the game remains the same with more people. Competitive, you don't need that because, like, everybody is using all the resources for themselves. But then, like you said, that fog of war element could be cheated in a competitive setting. So that's a problem you might have to tackle later.
Right.
But you don't need to for this first prototype.
Mm-hmm.
Another
thing is that in this case, if I recognize that that could be an issue, I can always research other games that have this sort of hidden information that people benefit from problem, mm-hmm. and see how other games tackle that problem and find a solution.
My idea was that, like, you can only use the active ability. You had mentioned how, like, the third action would be activating the space. You could only use that by revealing what the space is and what you do there.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, it could be a game where, like, in the first few moments of the game, people are just visiting places and they're not revealing what those places do. They're just seeing and collecting information. And then later on, they'll reveal that information. And it could be a part of the game where, like, it might be beneficial to reveal what a location does to use its action, not because you're pushing for the victory, but because, like, you're gaining some other small advantage that will help you later on.
Yeah. Yeah, that could be worked in. Solves the cheating problem for sure.
So those are just some ideas,
mm-hmm.
addressing your concerns at this stage of the game. But of course, like, these aren't things that you need to very much care about now. It's more important just to get that initial prototype together to see if the idea is, if it holds water as it stands.
Yeah. To see if it has legs it can stand on in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Did you want to try and talk like what kind of theme this game could have, what kind of flavor this game could have?
Well, yeah, I mentioned that the idea of having like this clock and a time loop, but also if the clock has like these runes on it, like we're thinking of, then it could easily be like a treasure hunter theme, like I was saying before, or some sort of like horror theme, though I personally wouldn't want to do a horror theme because that seems kind of common.
I do like the idea of like being trapped in a temple, like because you it's kind of like how tombs and temples have like curses ascribed to them. Like the curse of this temple is that you get locked in a time loop. And so the goal of the game is to solve the temple's curse and free yourself and leave all the other treasure hunters behind.
Right. Yeah, that's an idea, though.
That's
Sometimes it helps me to have a theme in mind when I make the first prototype, but also I think for this case, the mechanic is enough of a like guiding theme to, just make the prototype. Like time loop itself is sort of a theme.
This is a very bottom up design that we have here. So the theme is not the important part here.
Right.
Like we're starting with this mechanic.
But, like, in this case, time loop itself sort of gives you an idea of what's going on, that it's not completely abstract.
Sure.
Especially with a clock. And so, with that, I think I have everything I needed for this episode. I wanted to come up with a core mechanic. I wanted to determine what's needed for a basic prototype. And then, you know, actually outline that further to say, this is what I'm going to do for the prototype. So we accomplished all that for the first episode.
All right.
Thank you for listening. If you're interested in more of this series, keep an eye on our Twitter at BG Broscast and our Facebook at BG Broscast on Facebook. And we'll be uploading, or we'll be linking to the Patreon as soon as it goes live. We're planning on having it go live at the start of January, to coincide with the new year and our third year of podcasting, actually. But until now, you can be interested in, or you can just sit and think about what the game's gonna end up being. But anyways, we'll also have links to the Patreon on our website at bgbcast.com. And on there, you can also find all of our episodes. We tag them. This one isn't going to be tagged Let's Make a Game, because the rest of those are going to be released through Patreon, but you can find all of our previous episodes where we've talked about different game design ideas. You can find articles I've written under the Episodes and Articles tab, where I talk more about game design and writing. I think my most recent article is still the Untitled Goose Game article, where I talk a bit about genre. That sort of has a time loop theme, where I talk about the clockwork sort of routines in games like Goose Game. On our website, you can also find a link to our TeePublic store at teepublic.com/user/bgbcast. Is that right?
Yep.
And you can buy some cool merch with our logo on it. And let's see, I stream on twitch.tv/twack. That is twitch.tv/twak. I stream on most weekdays from about 12 a.m. Central Time, or 12 p.m. Central Time to 3 p.m. Central Time. I've been playing a game called Outer Wilds that's about a time loop, but I play a lot of other competitive games, roguelites, you name it, platformers, exploration games, puzzle games, fun stuff. And I am always down to talk game design on that stream as well. You can also, through there, find a link to my Discord server, where you'll get updates on when I go live, as well as updates on my other projects. And you can also find a link to my Twitter, at MattCraigGaming, where you can get updates on when I go live and updates on my other projects. Do you have anything to say? Or is that about it?
That's about it.
All right. Thank you for listening. And just a reminder, we are moving to bi-weekly episodes. So that will be every other week. And with that, thank you for listening, and we'll see you next year.